Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Dax, Quark, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts today are my fellow Trek actors, Robert Duncan McNeil and Terry Farrell.
Yay!
Ooh, the trio is together again. I'm so excited. Okay, so for the complete and exciting and amazing version of this podcast, I would suggest all of you go to patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up to become a patron today.
Yes.
Good day to you, sir. Good day to you, madam. How are you?
Very good. Oh, that's very formal of you.
It is.
Yes.
It's wonderful, darling. I love it.
Let's see.
Yes. I'm so happy to see you again. I've missed you so much.
We've missed you too.
Oh, golly. And I got to see Jerry Ryan, which just brought you guys closer to me.
You told us about that.
Yes. She's an angel.
Tell us about the dinner with Jerry.
That sounds great.
Well, she said something about meeting for din sum. And I'm like, well, I don't know a lot of places, but my favorite place is called Vinaigrette. And I know you'll love it because they have fabulous salads and all of that. I didn't know her husband was a chef.
Yeah, he is.
So then when we're going to order, she says, well, I hope there's enough acid in the frisée salad. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I hope I brought her to the right place.
Yeah, her husband's
okay
a major chef.
But not just
so it, cool.
Yeah, he's not just like some random chef. He's like top, you know, in the top 10
they
in the country.
They met at La Angerie, which is one of my favorite restaurants in Los Angeles way back in the day.
Yeah. Terry, I wish you had a chance to go to her restaurant with her husband, her chef husband. Ortolan was the name of it. So he left La Angerie.
Was restaurant together?
Yes. And it was really, really good food. Robbie, where was that?
It was on Beverly or 3rd.
Beverly or 3rd, that area.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yes.
Well, she invited me to her house for dinner. So I'm like, I am there.
Oh, that'll be a good meal.
Yeah.
For sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But anyway, so you guys ate at Vinaigrette, and what'd you guys talk about? Girl stuff?
Well, I told her about me being a part of this, and she sends you guys love. And
did she say that she loved me more than Robbie? Hopefully.
She would never.
She's not
that kind of person. Oh my gosh. She loves me better than the both of you.
That's probably true.
We'll go with that.
We'll go with that. But so that was super fun. I felt closer to you guys just seeing her too. And it was just so much fun to have somebody visiting Santa Fe and getting to hang out. It was really,
really
cool.
Was she filming? What was she doing out there?
Yeah, she was doing an episode of Dark Skies.
It's like a reboot of the old... Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, no, it's on... What is it on?
Terry, that's a show that was filmed a long time ago, a while ago. Right, Robbie?
Yeah, there was a show called Dark Skies...
It's Robert Redford.
Oh, no, this is something different, Robbie. Dark Skies that Robbie and I are talking about, it was a science fiction show that was filmed.
This is about the Southwest.
This is totally. It's
based on a book.
Yeah.
And, or is it R.R. Martin?
George R.R. Martin?
Thank you. Yes.
Okay.
He and Robert Redford are the executive producers, although she told me, she goes, well, Bob is more. I'm like, Bob.
She calls Robert Redford Bob.
Yes. Isn't that cool? It's so funny because it's like when I say William Shatner, I call him Bill. And Max is like, his name is William. And I'm like, Max,
no,
I call
he's
him
my
Bill.
Buddy. Yeah.
You know, Picardo is going to be very jealous if he hears about this. He's like, what? There's another Bob? I'm the only Bob in my life. Just me.
Oh my God. You sound just like him.
Thank you. I try.
You're so good at that stuff. Oh my gosh. Well, good. You should, because you're good at it. This must be the third season.
Her and Bob Redford.
Bob Redford. I love this for her. She's so talented. She did the second season.
Mm, okay.
And I only watched a couple episodes. But it was weird because I had just moved here and she was filming here. But if I'd known, I would have reached out right when I first moved here. But mm-hmm. I only found out like after I'd been here a few months, and then she was finished filming, and it was like, ugh. No, we could have had all that time together. But
but
I'm
you
really
did have
one
meal with her, which was good enough,
which is really good, and it's amazing to me how much just going back to LA and seeing friends, I, you know, Billingsley, John Billingsley.
He's great.
From Enterprise. Mm-hmm. We went to the Magic Castle because of Bonnie Gordon. She works there. Yep. And so she invited us. Oh my. Mm-hmm. And Dominic was there. We just had such a blast. She sings there.
Yeah.
She is so talented, Bonnie.
Super
and what
talented.
She is.
Gorgeous inside and out.
Robbie had her on Chuck as the general. As a general? Was she a general? What was she?
Benita Federici?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Benita.
And who's the actress I told you about that I'm going to work with?
Sarah Tomko, I think, from Resident
Sarah
Alien.
Tomko.
You're going to work with. You're doing a movie
yes.
with her.
Yes. We're That's doing a movie together. We're co-starring.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love when worlds come together.
Yeah, me too. I'm so
excited.
Where are
you filming that?
In the Catskills in New York in September.
Wow.
It's my first job in 20 years. I am like blown away. I'm so excited.
Good for you.
I know.
I want to come visit you on the set.
Come visit me on the set.
Catskills?
I know.
Son of a gun.
The director rented out a whole house. He's hiring a chef. We're all staying in the house.
Oh.
It's all basically shot in, well, it's shot in one room, except for a couple of exteriors. We're in the one room,
wow.
The whole movie.
You and Sarah Tomko. Oh
yeah.
Wow.
I'm really excited. I think the two of us will, I haven't met her yet, but.
I think you'll get along great.
Really?
I really do. Yes.
Oh, yay.
Robbie, you and I should just show up and surprise them.
Talk. What? You just
shut
up?
Robbie should show up and surprise. Robbie and I should show up and surprise Sarah Tomko and you,
so
right?
True.
That would be funny.
She would
you
not
guys
expect...
can go camping.
Yes. We'll bring
Robbie
our camper.
And I go camping together in the Catskills. Okay.
In the backyard where we're filming.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember a book? When you were a kid, it was a book about a kid that lived in New York City that ran away from home to the Catskills. And he lived in this hollowed out tree that was burned from. Anyway, he hollowed out a tree.
No.
He lived inside there. He made acorn pancakes. A hawk became his friend and it would help hunt things for him, like fish.
Don't remember this.
Did that
book?
Get you through childhood?
It did.
You really
and it made me
go to the Catskills.
I've never heard of it either.
Well, the minute you said you were filming the Catskills, I've been wanting to go to the Catskills since I was 5 years old or 6 years, however old I was.
Well, if that gives you a reason to go, come. And I'm sure I'm going to try to get there ahead of time, even if I have to say someplace different, just to get in the right mindset and get real peaceful.
Yeah,
because it's a lot of work in 10 days.
Yeah, it sounds like it. When you talked about it before, it sounds like you and Sarah have 99% of the words in the whole thing.
So go to the Catskills early, do yoga. You know, every day, like a yoga retreat. What if you did a yoga retreat for 4 days before the thing? It'd be amazing if you did
Wouldn't that be cool?
Right into the film.
Mm. I like you. I need you to have
calm.
But you need to manage it for me.
I'm going
to
go online. I'm going to go on the interwebs and I'm going to start looking for yoga retreats in the Catskill Mountains that are, you know,
we
already
could do
there.
That.
Yes.
Yeah.
Think about that.
That sounds
I would
great.
Totally join you for that. And then,
yay. Would you be up for that, Robbie?
That sounds like a blast. I would love to do that.
Wouldn't that be good?
I'll bring my camper.
What about your wives?
Yes. Bring everybody.
Bring them all.
I love the idea of yoga before, like doing some yoga. I feel like we should have done that on Star Trek before we started every day. If we had all just like had a little yoga session and just calmed down and bonded with each other, all the casts should have gone on an ayahuasca retreat.
Okay, stop, because I would be all in. I would be all in. If you hold
me
my
too.
Bar,
I'll
be all in.
Sweat lodge.
But so we could look at the Catskills as being
bond.
Our trust session. We could look at the Catskills as that.
Okay.
You know what's funny? Right? In the NFL, in sports ball, we're going to talk about a little bit about this. People make fun of Aaron Rodgers going on ayahuasca retreat. And I think, well, I wonder which one he goes to. I'd like to check it out. I that's my thinking, but everyone else is kind of like laughing at it. Like, look at him doing that, you know, foo-foo Hollywood stuff.
Well,
it's like,
he wins some games. Maybe it worked.
Maybe it worked. I'm all for anything that's going to expand your mind.
We've digressed like no other intro ever.
We've got a few birthdays to mention.
We have Carl Murphy, June 18th. Happy birthday, Carl.
Happy birthday, Carl.
Happy birthday, Carl. Woo, woo, woo. Stephanie Baker. Stephanie mm-hmm. Baker from Seattle. Her birthday is June 24th.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday to Stephanie.
Happy birthday, Stephanie.
Mm-hmm. Also, we have Cassandra Gerard, whose birthday is also on June 24th, the birthday of Stephanie Baker from Seattle. Happy birthday, Cassandra Gerard.
Happy birthday, Cassandra.
Happy birthday, Cassandra. James Morrow, your birthday's on June 25th. Happy birthday, James.
Yay. Happy birthday, Jimmy.
Happy birthday, Jimmy. Another birthday is Ann Harding. Her birthday is June 27th. Happy birthday, Ann.
Happy birthday, Ann.
Happy birthday, Ann.
And we have Robert Allen Stifler, whose birthday is on June 30th. Happy birthday, Robert.
Happy birthday, Robert. Nice name.
Yeah, happy birthday, Robert Allen Stifler. Yay, happy birthday, Jessica B., July 1st. Wow, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Jessica.
Happy birthday, Jessica. And our last birthday is Andrea Wilson on July 2nd. Happy birthday, Andrea.
Happy birthday, Andrea.
Happy birthday, Andrea.
Yay, look at all those birthdays. That's the most birthdays we've ever had on an episode. We're going to start this recap with our poetry synopsis. I'll start with mine, my limerick. Here we go. A terraformer arrives on the scene. He's got a huge amount of self-esteem. Cisco loves the lady in red, but she's just in Nadell's head. Better make sure you know when it's only a dream.
Ooh, yeah.
Ba-doom, boom, boom, bam. Boom,
that
boom.
Was freaking outstanding.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see?
Wow.
It really, that was gold.
Robbie brings
you.
It.
Yeah,
Robbie,
really gold. Yeah. That
thank
was
you.
Freaking genius.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. I appreciate
yeah.
that.
Wonderful.
Can I embarrass
wonderful.
Myself? Because
go.
I love,
let's hear,
I love
let's,
Garrett yes. giving us a giggle at the end.
Let's hear yours. Go.
It's short for me. Breathtaking attraction will not bring Cisco satisfaction. A death for a life, Saitex, sacrifice for his wife.
Nice.
Oh, that was good,
good.
Too.
Very good.
Even though it was short.
Yes. It was really good.
Sometimes it's
sometimes you, the shorter,
yeah, shorter can be
captures
better.
Captures that essence
but
even
I'm
more.
I'm so blown away by yours. Wow.
Oh, thank
really,
you.
Yeah, super thank good. You.
He's had some good
right,
ones
Garrett.
Over the years. Here we go. Let's
pressure's
round,
on
let's,
for the
here
haiku.
We go.
Pressure's
haiku.
On.
Here we go. My haiku for Second Sight. Cisco, meet Fena. Professor, full of himself. Freedom for Nadell. That's it.
Nice. We had good poems for this episode.
It was a good one.
Oh, you're very kind.
No, they're really
I wanted to make
mine
longer.
They don't have to be longer. Yours was really good.
Good. How about this? This is where I started. Infatuation feels like magic until his elusive nature vanished. And then I'm like, what? A bright star in the making, a life sacrifice for the taking. It's just so much fun to play with
like
these words.
You, yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
For, you know? And
absolutely.
I really appreciate you guys extending it so that I'm using my brain in another way. But this show was kind of difficult for me.
Yeah.
This
I didn't
episode?
Realize I was so heavy in it. Yeah.
This was difficult for me.
It wasn't a clear moral or it was just, but I liked the drive of it. I liked not knowing what she was about.
Definitely that mystery was compelling.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was compelling for sure.
Most of them you could see right through. Oh, here it is.
I know where this is going. Yeah, I didn't know. I had no idea.
Let's go through our guest stars. Guest stars. We have Sally Elise Richardson as Fena / Nadell. Richard Kiley as Gideon Saitic. Co-star.
Let me stop you right there. Richard Kiley.
Kiley.
Oh my God.
You love him, yes?
I didn't know he was in this episode. Richard Kiley is most known for Man of La Mancha. He was the original Don Quixote in Man of La Mancha. Mm-hmm. He sang the song Impossible Dream that is iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And as a young musical theater performer, I saw a production of Man of La Mancha and became obsessed with it. And the fact that Richard Kiley originated that role, it was just such an inspiring creative story. The Don Quixote story for creative people is such a powerful lesson, I guess, in following your dreams and believing in your dreams in spite of all the odds against you. I just love Richard Kiley. I love, he was so wonderful in this episode. And what a history of theater work, film and television work, a legend. He's really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, well, getting to work with him, I too was a giant fan of his.
Yeah.
And he was a joy.
I bet.
Joy. And you can see in this episode how effortlessly he plays this very gregarious character. He's, when he has that moment where it shifts and you see who he really is.
Yeah.
Oh.
When he says, she loves me and I don't know why, that sort of moment. Oh.
Yeah. And goes on to save her life.
Yeah.
And, but working with him, he was just spot on every time. He was kind. He was fun to be around. And gratefully, I got to play that. I was as tickled as I was to get to work with him.
Yeah.
That's, I felt awesome. Grateful for that, because when I saw Nana's character
being annoyed with him or
that
irritated,
kind of, be nicer to older people.
Well, and you know what's funny is you could have cast, there could have been another actor in that role that leaned into the narcissism and this, you know, the big ego and all. And I would have agreed with Kira. I would have been like, this guy's annoying. But Richard Kiley is so charming.
Yes.
And just exudes positivity. Like, he was having so much fun getting to do this role and be on.
I think he was.
I think he was too. You could feel it.
Yeah, because he's starring in it. Yeah. So that's, I think it's really great when we have actors with such gravitas that get to come on and do something that they're enjoying doing. And they're so excited to have it be about them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Sally Elise Richardson. She was in the dawn of her career. This, I think Deep Space Nine was maybe her third or fourth year into professional acting. So this was very early in her career. She, like you, Robbie, she ended up sort of, she became a series regular on Eureka, the show Eureka, which we have friends on that show. And it was there that they let her cut her teeth and direct a couple of episodes. So she basically is the female version of you. She stopped acting after that pretty much and went on to start directing. Now, so some of her credits from directing include Chicago Med, Luke Cage, Black Lightning, The Punisher, American Gods, Altered Carbon. So she's done some sci-fi stuff as well.
Yeah.
She's received the NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Directing in a Drama Series for Luke Cage. She also won a Black Reel Award for Outstanding Directing in a Comedy Series for Blackish. So she, like Robbie, has turned into a successful director.
Wow, she's very well-rounded.
Yeah. Have you met her,
like
Robbie?
You.
Have you bumped into her anywhere? Or
I have, I think... Yes, I have. Yeah. I have met her in some function or, you know, crossing paths.
Sure.
Yes. As in the directing side of things, for sure.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. Good on her. Definitely.
And I heard when one time from a producer friend of mine that had worked with her on Eureka that said she is just the sweetest, loveliest person.
Oh,
and so
don't you love to hear those stories?
Yeah. Gosh. She really was. And she, oh my gosh. Just talk about how the complete polar opposite of the two characters she played.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because when she was with Avery, she was so dreamy and like, you go, oh, how couldn't he fall in love with her?
Yeah,
she's
correct.
Gorgeous.
She's perfect.
Just, oh, and she kind and
yes,
you know, that kindness and fun to be around. It just makes all the difference in the world working with someone.
Yeah. For sure. We also have a co-star, Mark Erickson.
He was on the shuttle, I think. There was a couple of guys that spoke on the...
Like the captain of the shuttle?
That's probably it. Pearsall is the name, so
yes,
I don't know
that's
other
him.
Than that. Okay.
Yeah.
Teleplay by Mark Garrett O'Connell. Listen to this. Look at the spelling of that, Robbie. I could change my spelling of my name. It's G-E-H-R-E-D. Garrett.
Oh.
Garrett. Yeah. Mark
But
Garrett
then you wouldn't
O'Connell.
Be Garrett. You wouldn't be my Gawa.
I mean, you're Garrett. You're Garrett then. Is it a Gawa? Okay. Mark
Garrett
O'Connell and Stephen, Ira Stephen Bear as well. It's so funny. My iPhone auto-corrected Ira from Ira Stephen Bear to Aura, A-U-R-A. Aura, we should call him that if he's at a yoga retreat. Hey, Aura, come here. Aura
I don't Stephen think he's Bear. Coming to a yoga retreat with us.
and Robert Hewitt Wolf. The story we love his writing. The story is by Mark Garrett O'Connell. And this is directed by none other than Alex Singer. This is his first episode of DS9 that he ever directed. Robbie, did he go credited by Alex Singer on our show and Alexander Singer on DS9? Or was Alexander on Voyager? Because I don't remember.
Was Alexander credit-wise, but he went by Alex.
By Alex for us.
I loved Alex Singer.
Yeah, I think we called him Alex too.
But he, in a way, to me, I thought it ironic because Sciatic is this loud sort of, you know, outgoing sort of A-type personality. And I think Alex is like that in a way as well. Like, I see there's some similarities between those two.
I get
that.
I remember Alex Singer talking about, he was from the Bronx or something, from New York. And he talked about how, because I mentioned to him when he directed on Voyager, I mentioned my interest in directing. And he talked about how he got into directing. Long story short, he was a classmate of Stanley Kubrick. In high school.
What?
In the Bronx. They were both from, I think, the Bronx or not Super Brooklyn. Cool. I think it was the Bronx. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex Singer was awesome. He was old school, directed a ton of, you know, great classic TV and film stuff.
I like New Yorkers too.
This
is something different about their straightforward energy.
Yeah.
No bones about it. I just really appreciate that. It's so hard to work with directors that are afraid to hurt you or upset you. And it's like they create eggshells.
Yeah.
And it's too bad because, hopefully most of them grow out of that insecurity because I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, according to both Garrett Wang. Sorry.
Wong.
Jesus. Sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I know you're reading.
I correct people now.
I know you do.
And then according to both Garrett Wong and Robert Picardo, Singer had an unusual method of directing while filming episodes of Star Trek Voyager. After a take was over, instead of verbally talking out loud to the cast about what they did wrong in a scene, he would make a strange facial expression at them. It was his way of telling them they were being too expressive during a scene.
This is a story from Bob Picardo. Like, he would make a face at Bob, but he would not make the face at me. He actually said cut, and he walked up to me and said, Garrett, I don't know what you're doing, but for some reason you're clenching your jaw. And I'm like, what? Because you don't need to clench your jaw. Stop it. And so he did this.
That's funny.
He literally was just like, look, kid, I don't know. You know, you're thinking you're more masculine by clenching your jaw.
But see doing how some straightforward weird that is?
Very straightforward.
There's no way to take offense to that. You just go,
You know what else Alex Singer did that I loved and I still try to do, although it's different these days as a director. But Alex would not watch from the monitors. He would sit right next to the lens, whatever the main camera.
I love that.
I forgot that about
intimacy
that.
With you. It's like you're right there with us.
He's
watching a conductor.
Yeah.
You're hanging on.
He's 5 feet away from you when you're working, you know, and you knew he was there. And so you felt supported and you felt
or more like a collaborator connected. As opposed to someone directing and telling you what to
judging
do.
Right? You
judging
from afar.
You from afar. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. We're all in.
Yeah.
We're all in together. In
so you'll do that
story.
Now, Robbie? Well, you'll get
I
close
try.
To
it's a little harder because now these monitors and the village, you know, it's everything is there, but I will often. I get small monitors brought in by set, so I keep those close to camera so that I'm not next to the lens, but I'm, you know, 6-8 feet away.
Right.
As close as I can be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a great idea.
Without being distracting.
Without being distracting.
But you don't have that kind of personality either. There's some people that feel too, their energy so intense that it's better that they're behind the monitors.
Well, also, like, I do a lot of comedy. I've done a lot of comedy, and I know actors like hearing the feedback of laughter. And so I will be near the camera. I'll move those little monitors like Alex Singer did for us. I'll get close. And then in rehearsal and things like that, or even sometimes during the first take, I'll let myself laugh out loud if I feel it. Because I want I don't want to edit myself to be quiet so that I don't care. I'd rather them feel like, oh, I'm so funny. He can't help but laugh. which is true. I don't do a fake laugh, but I want them to know, like,
no,
you're
and during
it.
Rehearsal, then you also as an actor know when the laugh, well, whether it's working, but it also helps you
just to kind of mark it and know.
Like, okay, yes, that's funny. And I'm just, it helps you focus in a different way. I think it maybe it helps you relax.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, it is out loud funny because some things don't read funny and then they're hilarious when you're doing them. It's amazing.
Let me jump into this episode with you two. Let's jump right into the very first scene in Sisko's quarters. We have a personal log where Sisko talks about how he realizes why he's been not having really good sleep recently. It's because this is, well, the day before was the fourth anniversary of the death of his wife, Jennifer, during the Masquerade at Wolf 359 versus the Borg. So this was a, you know, this is a definitely
emotional
time for him.
He's playing chess.
Is he playing it?
He's looking at it. I think it was a place for him to focus on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe. But but also I think he makes a very important point that and that I think a lot of people going through bereavement and it's probably very difficult the first time you almost miss an anniversary of their passing. And when he expresses that, my heart, I've been in situations with people that have expressed like, oh my gosh, I nearly forgot it. And it's, it's just, you can feel guilty about it.
Yeah. This whole scene to me, so Jake comes in, he can't sleep either. We realize, you know, he's having a bad dream. We realize it's because of this anniversary. But I thought they played this beautifully. I really love this first scene. Sirach was so good in it.
And then at the end of that scene, when he says, "Dad, I love you," I started thinking about all the times that we hear that spoken on Voyager, which is very rare, definitely within the first couple of seasons. Robbie, did anyone say I love you to anyone else on our show? No. I don't think so. Did you ever say I love you even to your wife, Belana, on the show?
Yes. Okay. Season five or six.
Season five, again, not in the very beginning. Yeah.
Well, and you know what, too? Avery was such
a father figure to him. Is what you're going with?
Well, yeah, he championed that. And I think also more importantly, because of the stereotype of a Black man being a father, I think it was really important. I know it was paramount of importance to him to show a very healthy relationship between a father and a son. And he took that further by mentoring Sirach in real life. And that was really important. When you're a good father, I suppose all of us can relate to this, you want to help change the landscape, change the point of view, see that not all, it's a stereotype for a reason, but there are a lot of dads that are great dads that don't get credit.
Yeah. We talked to Sirach about this a little bit in a bonus interview. So for Patreon subscribers, you've seen, you know, Sirach talk about this. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, check it out. But we had a great conversation with Sirach about his relationship with Avery and how important that was to him at that time. Because of what was going on for Sirach,
himself too.
Single mom.
Great interview. Great interview.
Yeah.
So basically, he talks about the dream that he had, and you know that he can't find his dad, and he's looking everywhere, and basically this is a dream that he has because of the loss of his mother. It has to be attached to that. They express how they. Jake says he loves his dad. Sisko says I love you too, and then he says that he misses mom. And Jake's Sisko says, yeah, me too. And that brings us to the end of that scene.
Yeah.
Really heartfelt scene.
Very heartfelt. I loved that scene. I thought their performances and the writing were wonderful. So, we go to the promenade on the upper level next. Sisko's there. Feels like it's still at night, like the middle of night, doesn't it?
Isn't it a continuation pretty much of after he speaks with his son in a way? I felt like he got up and left and started walking.
Yeah.
Well, we never see dawn because we don't have the sun, but everything on the promenade is
very few people there, right?
So and he couldn't sleep. So we imagine that he just went from Jake going back to bed
to taking a walk. Yeah. Okay.
Looking at the stars, and then this mysterious woman suddenly appears behind him, Sally Richardson.
Right.
They end up walking and talking. She's very flirty with him and he's very interested in her. And in fact, did you notice in the beginning of the scene when she first steps forward and she says, beautiful, aren't they? Talking about the stars. I don't think I've ever seen the stars shine so brightly. And then Sisko looks out at the stars, and while he's talking, she elevator eyes him.
Oh,
She
she totally checks.
Goes,
she
yes.
checked everything out.
She
It was.
butt checks him. She butt checked him. I saw
Who could
it.
Blame her?
Robbie, I think she did
right?
a double. She did a double check.
She did a double
almost.
Butt
she,
check.
She looked. She looked down. She looked up, and she looked back down at the booty. She's like, mm-hmm,
yeah,
Oh my
It was
Lord.
Very nice.
But I hope this is worthwhile when he turns around.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be funny if he turns out? She's like, ah, she's like, oh my God, no, that's not what I expected you were going to look like.
That would be if Quark turned
yeah.
around.
Yeah.
Sorry, Armin.
Yes, I know. But poor Armin.
They take a little walk, very flirty. She's yeah. asking about the station. He says he's the commander. And then he offers to show around the station, you know. Mm-hmm. And he looks away for a moment. When he looks back, she's disappeared. She's vanished. And he even walks over, I think, to the rail, looks down below. Like, she's nowhere to
she's
be found.
Nowhere to be found. Like,
magic.
She's like, almost like she, I thought she was a ghost initially. I thought this was
I
a
did
ghost.
Too.
This is not even a human being. It's a, it's
yeah.
someone who died on the station and is now walking the, you know, the hallway, the promenade.
It's funny. Her performance felt a little bit like spirit-like. You know what I mean? It's,
you mean
it's
her delivery
ethereal.
Of her lines, her cadence
yes,
and how
very
she spoke?
Ethereal
Yeah.
And just kind of dreamy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she
Like
was
it's a dream.
totally dreamy.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, yeah.
She
We go
was,
to,
though. She did
she
such
was
a
great.
great job. It was
Yeah.
so, it was like watching magic happen,
Yeah.
the
Yeah.
chemistry between the two of them.
I thought this was going to lead to like something about Jennifer's death. Like,
Right. The,
this is like a
exactly. Like, this is
spirit
a
of
spirit version
Jennifer
of
or something.
Jennifer.
That's
Yes.
where I thought it was going at this point.
I do want to mention that I want to talk about the dress, the red dress that she's wearing. It's a beautiful piece, and it's worn also in Star Trek Generations, the film. There's a character named Antonia that wears that. And on Voyager, Robbie, that wardrobe was used on our show.
Who?
Well, Bob
Leosa.
Blackman.
Yeah.
What?
Leosa is the character. This was Barclay's girlfriend, seducer woman in that one
Oh,
episode, Inside
yeah.
Voyager episode, Inside Man. She had it on. Okay. So she was like,
So
come
that
on.
outfit's been around.
It's been around.
I
It
even wore it to a
was
rap party one time.
it was
Oh my God.
extraordinary.
It was
Just a
beautiful. Yeah.
gorgeous, gorgeous design.
Thanks,
Yeah.
Robbie. I cannot get that image out of my head now. You in that red dress right now is it's
You're
disturbing me right now.
welcome.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. We go to ops next. O'Brien is down working in the pit. I gotta say, I
What?
love the angle from the pit. We've seen it only a couple of times so far, but I love when Miles is down there. Sisko comes in. Sisko's very chipper, considering he didn't sleep all night. I thought he was very, very chipper, but it must be the love. It's the
We know
love.
what puts the
The
pep in that step.
infatuation.
Yeah.
Those
Yeah.
hormones are kicking
Infatuation.
in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Miles is kind of grumpy, but Sisko, you know, spins it in a positive way. He's like, oh,
Yeah.
come on. You know, you love having things to fix.
Yeah.
Sisko's very, very chipper. He goes to get some Chiralton tea from the replicator. And then
Right.
Kira seems very annoyed by this.
Yeah,
Kira's like, why are you
what's
getting.
with her this episode?
She's
She's
grumpy.
definitely got a bug up her ass.
No, he always drinks Ractigino. Why
Yeah,
would
but
we have tea
why is she
today?
mad at him about it? I
She's
would be
not
like,
mad. That's
did you
what's
guys read
weird.
mad about from that
Yes,
from I
definitely.
didn't
Like,
yes.
it just
No.
wasn't,
Well,
it
I do.
wasn't
Okay.
generous.
Well, then you two see it that way. I saw it as she was confused. It was confusion. I'm gonna go with that. I'm not gonna poo-poo her. She's just
But
confused.
confusion would have led to like curiosity, like, oh, that's
That's what I
weird.
thought
Like,
it
what?
was. I
No, she was
thought,
like, she was mad. Yeah.
Wow, you guys read. I'm sorry. Can we agree to disagree? I don't agree with you guys on that one.
We're gonna get you on board,
Okay.
Gawa.
All right. But for now, I'm going to
But for
say
if
that I
someone
don't.
came at me like that, I would be like, why are you
Like, what are
offended? I
your,
didn't
what it,
order what you
yes.
expected.
Yeah.
That
You
was a
have
little
some
off-putting.
feelings? Do you have something going on in your
Yeah,
life you
I
want to
don't know.
talk
It's just
about?
like, what do you
Because
give a
I'm
shit?
just drinking Chiralton
I don't
tea. Okay. Anyway,
Yeah.
she's annoyed. She says he always drinks Ractigino. Why
Yeah.
something else? She's, in my opinion, mad about it. He says he just wanted to try something a little different. Asks if she approves. Do you approve, Kira? Is that okay with you? And then Dax calls and says, Professor Sayatek?
Sayatek.
Sayatek is in the science lab and invites Sisko to come down and meet him. And that's where we end on Ops. So, Okay, so we're in the science lab next. Sisko arrives and Dax fills him in that this professor is here, but he's in the flux generator, which I guess is a room off of this science lab. I didn't recognize this science lab. It felt new to me, but I don't know if it is. Maybe.
Well, it's always a swing set. So yeah, it wasn't a permanent set. I wished it was, because I always like being in the science lab.
Oh, it's a great set.
My favorite thing, right? Yeah. But this one was particularly beautiful because it was bigger. And then that flux, that thing was big.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure it wasn't on the other side, but
we've never seen it before.
Opening that we see is huge. Yeah, we've never seen it.
This is the first time, right? The flux generator. Okay.
It felt almost like a.
It felt like a warp core or something. It felt a little bit like a warp core. Well, this flux capacitor, sorry, no, that's Back to the Future. This flux generator, the flux generator.
Hey, it's easy to go there.
Yeah, it's flashing. And we see Sayatek is in there, and he's got like this hood on, this this outfit. It looks like kind of like a welder's outfit or a nuclear power plant kind of. What was it?
A fancy beekeeper.
Yes.
Or a fancy beekeeper.
Fancy beekeeper. Yeah.
But Dax fills the audience in as she talks to Sisko that we now know he's a terraformer.
Right.
Sayatek. And Dax also says humility and common sense are not what they do. So we're starting to get a sense of who this guy is, that he's a bit of a, he's got a big ego.
But Sisko knows exactly who he is. Sisko is a fan of his work, basically. He says, I'm a great admirer of your work. And they start talking about, Sisko starts talking about how he and Jake visited Blue Horizon on the way to Deep Space Nine. And initially I thought, what? And I started looking it up and I thought, oh, what? It's not Jeff Bezos's, because his is Blue Origin, right? So it's not Blue.
And I really think this was filmed before Blue Origin.
But that's the thing. I thought that maybe that Jeff Bezos, being a Star Trek fan, took the name from this episode of DS9 and named his rocket that. But I realize it's not Horizon. It's you know, Blue Origin. So,
well,
but that
thank was you for catching me up.
Yes.
But yes, this is also the scene where we are introduced to Richard Kiley, the actor. I was thrilled to see him on screen. Mm-hmm. And
he's joy. Learned,
he just exudes joy.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved him.
So Blue Horizon is clearly one of his terraforming projects that, came off. Everything about it was amazing. People loved it. And Sayatek talks about, he says to Sisko, he goes, how did you like Da Vinci Falls? And I started thinking, oh, look at this foreshadowing, because later we see Leonardo da Vinci on Voyager. So it's almost like this is like the seeds of throwing in Da Vinci to then show Da Vinci later on our show. So
lovely.
Yeah, our connection here.
I've got to start watching your show.
I know.
You do.
I do.
We're
going
to have to do another podcast where watch we have Terry watch.
Yeah, we watch Terry watching our show. So it'll
okay.
be.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send you reaction shots.
Yes. Your reactions
No,
are amazing.
We'll be there in the room with you. So we'll be in a chair with popcorn watching you, and then you'll be watching the screen.
You know, I love these fantasies, but I need some of them to come true.
We will actually.
Because I want to hang out with you guys.
This podcast will be called Terry Watches Voyager, and we will review Terry watching Voyager. We won't talk about the show at all.
We won't talk about the show. We won't talk about Terry watching
reactions.
All the expressions and reactions.
I will talk about the show.
Yeah, you can talk about it. We're just going to talk about you. Anyway, we do learn that he's going to reignite a dead sun. This I forget
isn't
the name
it a
of it,
star
it's called Epsilon 119. Epsilon 119 is a dead sun, is what it is.
Dead sun.
Oh,
he's
going
to reignite it, and it's just to think that someone could actually do something like that is absolutely incredible from a science aspect.
Yeah And he says, if I reignite the sun, it's going to bring to life not just one planet. I'm not going to terraform one place. It's going to terraform an entire solar system.
Yeah.
So this will be like his crowning achievement. This will be the biggest thing he's ever done.
Right. But it's in theory. No one's ever done this before. So we don't know.
I like how he says, you know, Dax is still a little skeptical. It's not going to work. And he's very confident. He said he's only failed once and he didn't like the way it felt.
So, I love that moment. Wasn't that great?
It was great.
Oh my God, it was hilarious.
Great scene, lots of fun to watch you guys do it. Do you remember anything about doing the scene? Is there anything you remember about it?
I felt like when it first started, I thought it was just first started watching the episode. Oh my gosh, I don't remember this episode. When he came on, though, when I saw Richard Kiley, I was like, I remember loving doing this episode. But it's weird, this memory thing, because it's like I don't remember being in the room doing it. It's funny that way.
Yeah.
But I remember enjoying working with him and enjoying meeting Sally, because I didn't really, I mean, we had little scenes, but with a lot moments. Of people. So I didn't have moments with her.
Yeah.
But that it was a fun episode to do. And it probably also was in large part because of Alex.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I bet it was.
And I loved having so much to do with Avery.
Yeah.
I liked working with him.
Did you try on the beekeeper hat? Did you get to put that on?
Oh, heck no. It ruined my hair. Oh, my gosh. I would never do that to hair and makeup.
No.
My hair.
Actually, hair would not let you even do that. Hair would have tackled you. Like, don't touch that.
Right? And I'm Rhonda responsible. I'm like, with hair and makeup wardrobe, I'm like super careful. I am. I really am.
Did you come up with that, or does someone else say that?
Yes, just now.
I've never heard that.
I love it.
That's really good.
Terry Farrell has invented a new term, ladies and gentlemen.
Rhonda responsible.
Rhonda responsible. My goodness.
When you mentioned like not remembering the plot of the episode, but you remember how you felt working with a guest star, there's one episode when we were doing Voyager with Willie Garson that I had so much fun doing that episode with Willie.
You knew him beforehand, though. That
I
you
knew
were
him
friends
a
with
little,
him from
we
before.
We had met. We had done a play reading at the 52nd Street Project in New York many years ago.
Right.
We had sort of crossed paths, but we knew a lot of the same people. And Willie Garson and I, we laughed. We had so much fun. But when I rewatched the episode, I'm like, I don't know what happens in this episode, but I remember doing it.
Right.
I remember the fun that I had. Yeah. Yeah.
I had one like that on Becker. Huge fan of Stephen Wright. He comes on and does a guest star.
Oh.
We were the most unlikely, you know, like iconoclasts. Yes. Like,
yeah.
But we got each other, and we just, and it made everybody else hysterical. Like,
wow,
those two were having lunch. What? But I just thought he was a really cool, hilarious.
You still talk to
he's
him?
So
Terry?
Funny.
No, I mean, we had a great time on the set, but
darn,
you know, I
he's
know.
So funny.
He's so fun, right?
I used to sometimes.
Nice guy, quirky.
He's great, Terry. I talk about him on a regular basis because my first agent, when I booked Voyager, is the Stephen Wright of agents. He has the same dry ass delivery, just like
that's so funny. Yeah.
So I always talk about Stephen Wright.
I love Stephen Wright. His comedy albums are amazing because they're literally just one line jokes.
Yeah,
it's like it's not
kinda like,
it's not a normal
nobody
comedy.
Else can
no,
do it
it's
like him. Nobody
it's
else
like,
can do that.
No.
It's like Ethan Phillips. Ethan Phillips sort of does one-line
yes.
jokes as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to play music when I was directing while we were lighting. I put on like music to set a tone for the scene
on
we were doing.
On a speaker, yeah, it was good.
Oh, I love that. That's a nice touch, Robbie.
It was smart. Fun. But sometimes I would put on Stephen Wright comedy because they were such quick little jokes. And if we were working a comedy and stuff, just to keep people laughing, I'd play Stephen Wright comedy as we were lighting the scene.
That's
and it was
great.
So
smart,
fun.
Smart Robbie is. He's
you know,
trying
there's
to set the tone
two
with music.
Stations with that Jeff Foxworthy and somebody else. There's two comedy stations that I have. I have CNN, MSNBC, the two comedy stations, because after I listen to the news a little bit, then I put on the comedy
gotta
to
go
laugh.
Comedy. Yeah.
Because I like watching dark stuff, but that can really affect you if you're only watching dark movies and stuff like that. So those comedy stations really, and I have seen people look over at me and start laughing because I'm laughing. Because
you're
so
laughing
hard
in the car.
And...
That's amazing.
It's contagious.
It is.
And it's a good thing.
It's
it
great.
Is a good thing.
All right. We go to Quark's Cafe next. Dax is there eating with Sisko. She's talking about getting ready to leave. And basically, Sisko is just not paying attention.
Sisko is daydreaming. He's completely daydreaming. He is with Fenna as in this entire meal.
His head is there.
He's with Fenna. Yes. He's not with Dax.
Yeah.
And Dax notices this.
Yeah.
Dax knows for sure. Are you looking for someone? He's like,
Yeah.
No. Yeah, because don't forget, too, I have Curzon in me.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So Curzon was
curious too.
Was Sisko's mentor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
she knows him.
He knows. Yeah. I know him in that way because of Curzon.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, Dax, Curzon, all of her hosts together totally know what's going on with Sisko. Mm-hmm. And so Dax heads out to help O'Brien boost Saitic's maximum speed. They're going to have to be prepared to get away from this sun if they do reignite it. So Dax leaves, and then we go back to the promenade where he was looking at the stars, where he met Fenna. He goes back to the same window, and Fenna reappears. She's magically there.
Magically there.
Yeah. And she apologizes for disappearing. She says she wants a tour. And so they walk off arm in arm. So clearly they're
but
getting
it's
along.
It's weird because she says, she didn't say to disappear. She says, I'm sorry I left so quickly.
Yeah.
And it was like, left? You disappeared.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But he's so infatuated by her. At this point, he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just wants to be near her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she wants the tour. So they go up to some upper pylon, the upper pylon viewing area.
Yeah.
Where you can look down and see, and it was a beautiful angle when they got to that 50-50 shot. And by the way, I want to say Alex Singer did a great job of this episode. He really did.
What did you like about it?
I just like the subtlety. I know Alex, I remember he would not force blocking. He'd let the actors kind of do things, mm-hmm. and he'd fit his plan into that. So I know that he was reacting to what the actors did. You could sense it because the way the camera moved and adjusted, it was actors, you know, bringing the scene to life. And he was mm-hmm. just kind of following it in such an
and
elegant way.
And how smart to let that inform him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really good way of looking at everything. You, instead of making your job harder.
Yeah.
Watch how it unfolds and speak to what's organically happening.
Yeah. Right. And he did that beautifully. It felt very organic and mm-hmm. and elegant and mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just really good.
Yeah, it never took you out. There weren't shots where you went, oh, no. What are they doing here?
Yeah. Well, it's another very flirty scene looking down onto the entire station. Mm-hmm. And he compliments her, says, you know, you always know exactly the right thing to say. And then he asks about her. Tell me about yourself. But she gets uncomfortable here. She says, I can't tell you. And then she kind of turns to run. She runs to a lift. And that dress is kind of blowing back. She runs to the lift.
Very dramatic.
Yeah. Very dramatic.
Oh, I loved it. And then she spun around and it kind of moved.
Yeah, with her and you see her looking
Black
at
Man
him.
Must have been like, yes, yes.
You go, girl. Yeah, that is, he was on the side of the set going, you go, girl. That's the way I want that dress to flow. Yes, that's exactly what happened.
It was great. Very dramatic ending as she gets in the lift and the door is shut. And, you know, and Sisko's just yearning for her there. It was great. Yeah. Very dramatic moment.
Now we're in Sisko's quarters and mm-hmm. it's food time again. This whole episode's about eating and not paying attention to what's going on around you. So yes, he's eating with his son, Jake, and Jake's telling this story about a friend barfing basically from Klingon worms. And it's so funny because I don't think a word of it even makes it into Benjamin Sisko's head. He doesn't hear anything. All he hears and can think of is Fenna and more Fenna. But the look that, I mean, the looks that you see on Sarak's face, how did you read that final look at the very end? When he almost looked pissed. Like he just gave this, or super confused. He gave this really weird look at his dad.
I wanted it directed differently because he did two double takes.
He
it
did
was
do
like,
two.
And it was just one was enough.
One was enough. Yes.
And two made it look like he wasn't a good actor. And he is. So I think as a director, I don't think there's a way to cut fast enough without it ruining the shot.
Could that have been cut? Could it have been edited out at that
point? You could have edited that second. Yeah, it was a double take.
You could have cut it out.
Well, don't you agree?
I agree with you. But an edit would have been fine.
I just noticed the second look. Yeah. I think that it would have been better. Also, sometimes this is terrible to say, but I didn't really believe Avery was fantasizing.
I agree.
Okay.
This is where I started losing this episode, to be honest with you.
Oh, in this scene? In this particular scene?
Around this time of the episode, Right. Because I didn't really, I wasn't invested in his, I didn't believe that he really loved this woman or was like that. Jake starts saying, oh, you're in love. And I was like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes. Like, we haven't done that. That yet.
He asked that though.
Yeah, he asked it. Yeah. And he says, but you're showing three signs of love. It's
that Nog
daydreaming, loss of appetite, smiling all the time.
Yeah.
How could he be in love when he's literally talked to this woman for 30 seconds in total? Yeah. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me.
It's puppy love. It's that initial sort of excitement attraction. It's not
but
love.
But also, in how he was daydreaming when he had food with me and when he's having food with Jake, did not look like in love daydreaming. He looked preoccupied.
Yes.
And I think it should have looked more, I think there should have been more lightness around it.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe that he was lost in thought about her. I didn't. I hate saying that because I really love and admire Avery, but that just bothered me.
It bothered me too, because I thought it was a different story. I kept thinking, why did they have the first scene about his dead wife if it's not going to have anything to do with this? So I kept thinking, oh, right. his look is really weird and heavy.
Yeah.
Because it's really about he's being haunted by some version spirit of his ex-wife that looks different. I kept looking for a more complicated story because it was played confusing to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So can I throw this out there? Was it played heavy because as an actor, he was thinking, am I feeling guilty for having these thoughts about another woman right now? Am I being
bad? That
would
have been a great story. They should have written that story.
Okay.
Yeah. I would have preferred that story. Right. Well, but that,
I thought maybe that's what Avery was working on. And that's what he brought to the table was like, look, this is not right for Jennifer. This doesn't do her memory justice. How dare I have feelings for this other woman?
Or just that I'm having flirting some with. Guilt all the way
some
around.
Guilt all around. And I thought maybe that's the heaviness he was playing, though.
Then you have to speak to it.
Then you
have
to speak to it. And it's, but it's
not the story is too short. The 42 minutes is too short for us to make that grand assumption.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we're focused on this beautiful girl who, or woman that we are really, because of the first scene, really happy for him that he's finally had some feelings. But that also should be something that we're feeling when he's lost in thought. For people to think that he's in love with somebody, I just think you come off happier and less kind of concerned. It's not that
he seemed haunted to me. It seemed haunted, the look. It was like...
It didn't seem joyful.
Yeah,
it didn't. And like, ooh, I'm filled with anticipation and I'm intoxicated by this woman.
Yeah.
That's not how it felt while he was playing with his oatmeal, which also felt like perfunctory, not genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe he had stuff going on in his personal life. We don't know, how that maybe was played. We have no clue.
This episode to me started falling apart here, and we'll get into ratings and things like that. But I just was like, oh, even though there's individual things, Richard Kiley's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Sally's amazing. There's great moments.
I was terrific.
Dax was this another phenomenal Terry Farrell episode. But it's just individually, there's moments and pieces, but as a episode, it, to me, started going downhill here and continued to go downhill, in my opinion.
And
but
here we go.
Here we go. Benjamin Sisko does admit, though, to Jake that he is in love, basically. Mm-hmm. Jake wants to meet her. Yeah. And Sisko says she keeps disappearing. And that's where get that funny look from Ciroc.
That weird double take. He is so obsessed. He is so obsessed with Fenna that the next scene, he's now in Odo's office. Mm-hmm. And asking Odo for a personal favor, Odo's like, well, what do you need? And he's like, well, I need to find somebody. And Odo's like, okay, well, what do you have? And he's like, Fenna, first name or last? I have no clue. He doesn't even know what species she is. He doesn't know anything. So all this stuff, all the information he's giving to Odo is just very uninformative. Is the best way to put it.
Her name's Fenna. I don't know her last name. I don't know where she's from. I don't know her species.
Yeah, she wears red.
She's wearing
red.
Red. Yeah. The way
he said it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right? Red.
That was hot. But see, that's another indication where it's like, well, then why wasn't that in there when he was playing with his food in both scenes?
Because
it was inconsistent. I don't know. It just felt inconsistent to me. But I loved how he said red. It was just so magnetic.
Yeah, he started to say, he said, she's wearing, and then it's like this light bulb.
Yeah.
She's wearing red.
Yeah. So I just wanted to feel that. I felt him saying red, right? It wasn't just the color. It was like red is a feeling.
Yeah.
Yes. Not just the color.
Yes. I did like Renee's sort of, okay, well, I don't have much to go on, but I'll try. I'll do what I can.
Yeah.
And Cisco's very appreciative. And then after Cisco leaves, Renee was like, oh, geez.
He eye rolled her. Yeah, he eye rolled Cisco, didn't he? He was like, oh my God. Like,
yes.
Yeah. I love it.
It was funny.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We go to ops next. Dax intercepts Cisco, who's coming in, asks to talk to him for a minute. They go inside the commander's office, and Dax wants to know who this woman is, that she saw them on the promenade last night. I love this scene, Terry, because you play it like Curzon. You're playing it like a dude.
Yeah.
Like your physicality.
Thank you.
It was so good.
It's because Terry, I'm a woman.
You can play a dude well.
You're
so versatile. It doesn't matter what gender it is. Terry Farrell will play it.
It was like guys in the locker room. It was that kind of vibe. You know, and Cisco's got his baseball. He's tossing it to Dax at the end of the scene. Like, it was just really well done.
And how happy was I when I caught the baseball without looking at it?
Oh, good job. Yeah.
In a close up. And then I tossed it and still caught it. That was the only stress of that entire episode.
I love when Dax says, it's because I'm a woman now, isn't it? And Cisco's laugh, Avery Brooks' laugh right there. His line is, it doesn't even say, you know, his line is, don't be ridiculous. And I'm sure there was no other instruction in the script saying you must laugh.
No, but
here,
we both just laughed.
We know, it was just this great laugh between both of you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, that's what's fun about working with him.
Mm-hmm. You never know how he's going to play it or how he's going
to
say it.
Well, right. And you have to be loose.
Yeah, you do. Loosey goosey, go with the flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes both ways.
Yes. I mean, Dax is really, really insistent upon getting information. And Cisco's just saying, look, as soon as I know, as soon as there's something to talk about, I'll let you know. And there you go. The guy bonding scene between Dax and Cisco.
Yes.
Or Curzon, Dax and Cisco. Yeah.
I love that part of it. Mm-hmm. Cisco says Odo's continuing to search for new information about Fena. In the meantime, Saitic has invited me and the senior staff to dinner on board his ship, the Prometheus.
Yes.
So we go inside Saitic's quarters. It's a crew dinner. It's like a wrap party. Felt like a wrap party. the whole cast.
Everybody's
there.
That
ship was cool though, huh?
It was very cool.
It is very cool ship.
Yeah. But we have everyone here, right? We've got Dax, we've got Kira, we've got Bashir, we've got O'Brien, we've got Cisco. Everyone's there, the whole gang.
Everybody's there, crew dinner. And Saitic is a talker, basically. He's a storyteller. Mm. And Bashir's kind of into it. You know, Bashir asks, how are you going to reignite the sun? And Sayatik goes into all the explanation. He's going to have a remote shuttle deliver this protomatter. It's going to reignite the star. They talk about his memoir, and Sayatik says, oh, all nine volumes of his memoir.
I love that.
It was very funny.
What did he say about his wives? Like one, he said, I wanted to have a volume for each wife or something like that.
Like that. Yeah.
To match my wife. Yeah, he says something about this. You think, wow, he's been married 9 times.
Yeah.
But it's not hard to imagine with that kind of personality.
I always said I wanted to write as many books as I've had marriages. Is what
there
he
you
said.
Go. Yes. There yes. you go. Thank you.
Should Jake have been at this dinner as well? Is it weird that he's not there?
No, it's not weird. It's an adult.
Just a grown-up dinner? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Continue.
Bashir does mention that he went to his art exhibit and Sayatik talks about his art for a minute. And Bashir says, well, they were the largest paintings I've ever seen in my life. He sort of describes these enormous paintings. So you can tell his ego is just, you know, he does everything big.
Yeah, and you can also tell that Bashir is a fanboy in this scene.
Yeah. Which is sweet.
It is very sweet. It is very sweet. And then he goes to get his wife, to bring his wife in.
Because she cooked every single dish by hand, right? It was not replicated. Mm-hmm. That's the whole... That's the
homemade
twist.
Dinner. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very, very proud of his wife, goes to get her. And this is where Kira wants to get out of here. She's like, can we just leave? She's very funny. And then Sayatik returns with his wife, whose name is Nadelle, but she looks like Fena, identical to Fena. Mm-hmm. And I love Dax's last line in the scene when she comes out. Mm-hmm. Dax goes, well, now we have something to talk about.
Yes.
Very and her funny. Demeanor is so completely
so different.
It's so different.
Yeah. It's not like she's acting. It's like she does such a good job that it's just polar opposite.
Completely.
Yeah.
Everything that we see her doing as Fena has been turned off. It's like the switch is like click, gone.
Yeah, like she's disengaged almost. Yeah. She's there like she has to be.
Well, she did a good job being the wife who doesn't want to be in the relationship with the husband who she's no longer in love with, basically, right? So I think
how could you stay in love with somebody who's not interested in anything you're doing?
Yeah.
And it's always about
his thing.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After dinner, we're at the dining table and Sayatik basically goes through the recipe for his dinner creation, gives everybody all the ingredients. Yes. And while he's doing that, Dask is talking to Sisko privately off to the side about, you know, is this the same woman? She looks the same, Sisko says. But
and she
weird.
Sounds the same.
Sounds
same
the
voice.
Same.
Yeah.
Probably you just called Terry's character Dask instead of Dax.
I did?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dask. You did, but
it's okay. Like she's a desk.
Ask
you know,
Dask.
Ask Dax about her desk.
Ask Dax.
That's what happens when we try to hurry.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Continue.
Anyway, they have this little side conversation. They can't figure this out. And then they decide to, they all decide Sayatik's going to take them into the other room to relax and continue the conversation. Sisko stays behind and he asks Nadelle why she didn't just tell him that she was married. And she says, what are you talking about? We just met. Mm-hmm. And he says, do you know Fena? And she pauses. She does pause there for a minute, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting when he brings up the name. She kind of stops and
which
it does
now
register.
Reflecting what we know from the end, that she does know who Fena is.
She had another, the same, similar thing.
I don't
want to
ruin anything,
before,
but right?
don't tell me the ending.
No, I'm not going to. You have to listen to the whole podcast.
Exactly. She says, you must have mistaken me for someone else. And then he leaves. So she's not helping at all here.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
She's absolutely of no help.
He seemed very upset, though, when she says, Commander, you've mistaken me for someone else. And his final line says, goes, seems that way, doesn't it? He's not happy at all.
Yes.
No, it seemed like
he
part
feels
of him
like
just doesn't believe her.
He feels like she's blowing him off right now, is what she's thinking. Yeah.
And that's kind of how I was taking it, watching it.
Mm-hmm.
She's a liar, philanderer.
Exactly. We're in the ops next. Sisko's talking to Dax, and And Cisco says, he insists that this has got to be the same woman.
Yeah.
And Dax says, well, just talk to her when she's not around her husband. And he's like, Dax, she's a married woman. And I love Dax's response. She goes,
oh my gosh.
Well, that never stopped Curzon, did it? I was like, whoa, dude, Curzon. But we did see that episode where Curzon
Dax, was with the...
Yes, the married woman.
Yeah.
Well, Odo enters in the middle of Dax talking about having Curzon affairs. Odo enters and says he cannot find this woman. And Sisko says, it's okay. I found her. Don't worry about it. Sisko says she came from the Prometheus. And Odo stops. He's like, wait, that's impossible. Saitic is the only person that came off of that ship.
No one else
came off of that ship. Mm-hmm. So very confusing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I kept waiting for this ghost of Jennifer's storyline that I thought it was going to be. This, I'm still stuck.
Let it go.
I know.
Yeah. Let it go, Robbie.
But why did they have that first scene then? It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
It has nothing to do with this episode. They never reference a dead wife or any of that again.
No.
Yeah, it's weird.
I thought that maybe the reference would be more, you remind me of my wife, Jennifer.
Yeah, anything.
Something like that would have helped. Nothing. Yes.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Or even if he didn't say it to her, but he said it to me. Dax, she reminds me of Jennifer. Yes. Yes.
Plenty of opportunities for him to kind of put it together, get
just
some
like
context.
Three spots.
Yeah.
The big juicy thing and a couple of little extras would have helped tie everything together.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Armin had a lot of time off on this episode, didn't he? I think he only has one scene here coming up.
That right? He does very well.
He does. It was a great scene.
Yeah. Well, yeah. we're back on the upper level of the promenade. Sisko goes back up there to try to find Fenna. Mm. And she stood him up this time. She didn't show up. And that's when Quark appears. And Quark sees that he's been stood up, invites Sisko to come to the bar to talk about women, which I thought was very funny.
So cute. But it was very sweet.
It seemed very sincere. Yes.
Yeah. Quark seemed very sincere.
Yes. And even when he says, when Sisko says he doesn't want to talk about women with him, Quark walks away and his last parting comment is, don't forget, the holosuites are always open. So he's still trying to help. He's like, look, if you feel bad about being stood up, we do have holosuites. So yeah. I thought that was very
nice of him.
That
kind of felt smarmy after the really sweet. To me, it was like, oh, really? I don't think that's what's on his mind. Because Sisko was so
was covering all the bases. You
know? I thought that was the whole agenda, that he's like, you've been stood up. Let's go talk about it. And he was going to get him to go
spend
to a holosuite, spend some money.
Oh,
exactly.
You felt that? Oh,
I felt like the whole thing, that was his agenda.
He's Quark, not maybe. Armin. Yeah. Armin wouldn't do that, but no. Quark,
Quark would.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that he sold it sincerely. That
me too.
I thought that was great. Sisko goes back. He doesn't want to go to a holosuite. He goes back to his quarters. And just as he goes into the door, enters the door, he hears Fenna. Fenna appears, surprises him, she appears out of nowhere again.
Yeah. Ta-da!
She's magic. And he wants to know if she's married. He's like, I need some answers here. Mm-hmm. He asks, do you know Nadelle? And she says, no. Don't know Nadelle.
Well, he says, like, you're telling me that your name isn't really Nadelle and you're not the wife of Gideon Saitic. So he says he lays it all out right there.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, does he say you have a twin?
Yeah, he does ask about
that.
You know,
too?
You couldn't have a twin sister, do you? That's in there too, I think.
Mm. Yeah, but she says, no, none of, like, that's not true. She's not lying to him. And she's very sincere in this scene and it's very sweet. She says, you know, she thought that, she was looking for a place to belong, but now she knows she was looking for a person, and that you see she's really in love with Sisko here, has
very
strong feelings.
Rom-com lines.
Yes.
Yeah, because she never answers anything. She still doesn't. So it's like, this should be a big red flag.
It should be, but
everybody,
but instead,
if you're asking someone
her.
A question, yeah. Right?
instead he makes out with her.
Because
he's lonely
and she's beautiful.
Yeah, but but didn't that bother you though? Like, if I was Sisko, I'd be thinking like, wait a minute, you're really playing
Although
a game with my head.
I've kind of been there myself. If someone's seducing you and not really giving you information, but you're lonely and you want connection, sometimes all of us let those hormones take over. That love is blind thing is no joke.
Yeah.
That's like trickery in a way, because that's not sincere.
No.
No, then you're being seduced. And you might want to be seduced for a period of time, but you must know that, like Cisco says, this is a dream.
Yeah.
It's not something real unless you're sharing real information and making an intimate connection.
I think that was my problem with this episode, is because as a character, she had to not give him any information. I felt like, well, then it makes Cisco look stupid, because he should at a certain point go, there's something wrong or dangerous.
I'm not playing this.
Yeah. And he didn't.
Yeah. And well, I think he has kind of done that, though. And at the end of this scene, when she disappears after the kiss, you can see his frustration. And to me, I imagine that Cisco is intelligent enough to know that this is a red flag, that this woman isn't, but he still desires her.
And
physically, you can't blame him, because she's beautiful.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And he's been lonely, and it's been 4 years, and it's a lot to finally feel attracted to somebody when you haven't felt attracted to anybody for years.
Yeah.
So I can understand where he gets sucked in, but I love how he has his face in his hands with this frustration of, I have to know more, and this something's wrong with this, but I'm so crazy attracted to her. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
I like that moment.
Yeah. It was a nice moment when he drops down, sits down, and then she squats down or kneels down, comes down to his level. And that's when they kiss in a very sweet, very romantic. It's all very romantic. It's just,
but she disappears right after that kiss.
Yeah.
But
and when he throws himself into his what?
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, like, when he does that thing like that, it's, to me, it was a weird choice, because he just physically saw her disappear in front of him for the first time. It's not a beam out. He knows it's not being transported. He knows what a transporter beam out sounds like, looks like. He should have been more like, what the, you know, WTF? What happened?
And she's like, what's happening to me?
Instead, he's just like,
I was gonna get some.
I was gonna get.
No, that's not what it was.
That's not what he was thinking. But still,
why didn't he reach out to her? How about that? Because she was.
He should have went. Yeah, he should have went. Like, just reaching out. Like, where the?
Because she looked confused when she started to disappear.
Yeah, she did have a little look. His name. She says, Benjamin. What's happening? Basically, she doesn't know what's happening.
And he could stand up and go to Fenna.
Yes, that's what I thought.
And then she's gone. That would have been a good thing.
That's my point. He didn't.
We fixed it.
We did.
Hindsight, 2020.
We're called the show doctors. We're going to fix every show for you. We know how to do it.
We fix this scene. Yeah. Yes, Cisco should be, scene doctor. You know, reach for her and try to catch her.
There you go.
We go to the airlock next, in the airlock corridor. Dax is preparing.
Back to sanity.
Yes, back to sanity with Dax.
That's her cable access show, Sanity with Dax, 3 p.m. on. Okay.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, she's getting ready to depart. O'Brien has the engines, we learn, able to get to warp 9.6. And and Dax talks about, well, shouldn't we only go to 9.5? Isn't that what they say? And Miles is basically saying, I've made it, given you a little extra.
But Tom Paris, tell me, Tom Paris.
Yes, This is what Tom Paris would say about getting near warp 10. You may turn into a salamander. You may kidnap the captain or the commander and have babies with them. So don't go past warp 10. I'm just saying.
Just saying. I'll keep that in mind.
Miles doesn't know this, but he has put Dax in danger of turning into a salamander, getting that close. So watch out.
I would make a very cute salamander.
You would.
Thank you.
Cisco arrives as they're getting ready. Sayatik says, let's go, hurry up. And Cisco says he wants to come along.
He does have a funny line, though, right? Yeah. And when he says, must I remind you, Lieutenant, some of us only have one lifetime.
Yes, that was cute.
That was cute.
But I'm worried that Cisco's coming along.
Oh, yeah. This is a last minute change.
And what if something goes awry? Because that's the whole reason we have the warp 9.6, because if that thing goes supernova, we got a hightail out of there.
You're toasted.
Yeah, I don't even think we'd get out of there.
No, I don't think you would.
Terry, I love awry, the use of that word. People don't use it enough. Awry.
Oh, wow. Mm. I'm showing my age.
No. Put awry in a poem. Your next poem needs to have awry in it.
Awry.
Okay, so next scene is on the Prometheus Bridge. And did you notice all the TNG style uniforms on this bridge?
Yes. I did not. Good for you.
I don't understand it. I don't, because the DS9 people have the uniforms that we had on Voyager. Why would the Prometheus have the TNG? I just didn't, it's cool, but I didn't understand it.
Yeah,
like, are they a different part
same,
of Starfleet?
No, we should have all had the same uniform. But the DS9 is different because they've taken starch and bent out the little opening,
yeah,
right?
That's so true.
Well,
that's
and two, TNG is happening concurrently.
Oh, still happening.
Yeah.
So
that would make sense that it doesn't really matter because we didn't have the same uniforms as Next Gen, and they were filming. We overlapped 2 years in filming.
Yeah,
but we were happening in the same time period.
Yeah,
timeline. Thank you.
I get it. That does make sense then that you mix
and they probably
match
had extra uniforms. Maybe that was just like, okay,
that's a budget. That would make the most sense.
We don't have to make new uniforms.
Yep. We got plenty of these old TNG uniforms. Let's throw them on the.
Yeah, but if you think about continuity, though, once they roll out a new uniform, the new DS9 uniform, the TNG guy should have been switched over to that uniform then to have continuity.
Like maybe on starships they have one uniform, and out in the field, like on a space station where you're not on a starship, maybe it's a different uniform.
Yeah. I think that's a good excuse. Besides, budget. Also, it differentiates that we're coming from DS9 and these people are on the Prometheus. So if they're not wearing Starfleet uniforms, they should have been wearing something different anyway, so that we're not confused as an audience to why are all the Deep Space Nine people on this Prometheus?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
And maybe the budget, it was better to use the TNG uniforms than it was to make new uniforms for on one episode, one scene.
Yeah. My own curiosity, what are both of your takes on the TNG style uniform? Do you prefer those over, do you think those look better than DS9 era or Voyager era uniforms?
I think the TNG looked more like the original series, like some of the films. It felt more connected to the films of the original series.
Okay.
But I don't know. But they were kind of spandexy too, weren't they?
Well, you wore the TNG uniform. Robbie, you wore the TNG uniform when you guest starred on it. Did you like wearing that better?
No.
Oh, you did not?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
It was cooler. It was it was less like our uniforms were wool and they were really hot.
So it was cooler to wear on your body, not cool as in looking cool.
Temperature-wise, I was much more comfortable temperature-wise.
Yeah.
But in terms of the fit.
The material?
The material on the TNG uniform was stretchier. Because it was like spandexy.
Yeah.
That part I liked. I just didn't like the way it looked. Like it was not forgiving. It was it was.
No, we had
every crevice.
It's not forgiving. We started out with the wool uniforms and then we switched to the spandex ones.
What? Really?
Yeah.
You guys had spandex?
You'll see it. I don't want to ruin the story for you.
Don't.
Because Terry, they gave us the wool and we stayed with the wool. We never went to anything.
Yeah, we were in wool all 7 years.
We were dying.
It was hot. So they were hot.
Yeah, they are hot. And I had wool crepe on top of my head to make that, put my hair over that to make it big.
Oh my gosh.
So they gave me pin curls to have my 3/4 fall, and that thing of wool. And my hair covered, so it was like I was wearing a wool hat.
Yeah, like a winter hat. Oh my gosh.
And
you had a wool cap on? I did not know that.
Right?
The entire 6 years you had a wool cap?
Yes.
Wow.
It's called crepe wool.
Okay.
And they just put it in between, but it's wool.
Yeah.
So it keeps your heat
it's
in,
hot.
Right?
Yeah.
And then what are they called? Support hose? And who... Why did we have to have a one-piece turtleneck long sleeve shirt underneath it? It should have been a dickie.
Like a dickie, yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. A dickie with fake sleeves, but then you'd be right up against the wool, which would be scratchy and uncomfortable.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So it was just, we were all hot.
It was, yes, they were very uncomfortable.
Those hot lights.
And not in a sexy way.
No. Well, on the Prometheus, they have different uniforms, which is weird, but we've solved that problem.
And again, made me a lot
save,
of it.
Save the episode. They're en route to this dead sun. Dax is working with this crew member named Pearsall, who was getting the Prometheus ready here. Normally I don't say this, but I didn't like this actor very much. I didn't think he was great.
I didn't believe him at all.
No.
Is he the commander of that bridge?
It seems like, yeah.
And he was the one that basically towards the end had pretty much no emotion about what Sayotik was doing as well. Yeah. That guy. Yeah.
He looked like he was very unhappy to be there and he had to say the
or
line.
Nervous or something.
I think it was nerves, guys. It's usually nerves. I'm going to say it's going to be nerves.
He's very inexperienced and nervous. And after having Richard Kiley, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
You want a strong crew. And I just felt like they got the cheap version on the crew.
They really did.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, is that something, Robbie, you think that Alex could have helped a little bit more? Or was that out of his control?
Well, here's the thing. He had two lines. You're not going to get a massively experienced actor.
For the under five.
They could have paid someone a full guest star rate, even though there was only a few lines, but instead they went for the under five rate,
which is
a much cheaper rate, but you're going to get different actors willing to do that.
Yeah. And people with less experience, that's a hard job. That's a hard job to come on and do two lines and that's it.
Yeah.
I did that I got my after card on As the World Turns, the soap opera in New York in an under five role. And I was terrified because you only have, two or three lines and you're waiting for your turn. Yes. And everybody else. Oh, it was horrible.
Well, that's hard when you're even doing the show.
Yeah.
And you only have a couple lines in the middle of
a series regular. It still makes you nervous. Yeah.
Well, especially because they're running on time and that one mistake, you got to start over with all those people. Oh, it's such a nightmare.
Well, anyway, so we're on the bridge of the Prometheus. They're headed there. They're trying to get the protomatter ready. Sayotik tells Sisko stories about terraforming New Halana, I think it was. And that's where he met Nadel. And Nadel was the daughter of a dignitary there, and she was very infatuated with him from the start. So he ended up taking her off-world for the first time she'd ever been off-world. And he gets very emotional at the end of the scene, says that she loves him deeply, but he doesn't know why. And this was a moment. This was an important moment because there's more going on there in that marriage than he's saying or that we have seen so far.
Yeah. And it was evident in the dinner, too, because he took over explaining the food. So he's controlling how she cooks it. She looks miserable. She looks really unhappy. Mm-hmm. And like a kept woman, that's like a bird in a cage. That's what she seemed like at that dinner to me.
Yeah.
Those two final lines when Sisko says, she must love you very much. And Sayotik says, she does, Commander. Don't ask me why, but she does.
Realization that he's kind of a jerk, that he's not a great husband.
He knows.
Mm. He knows.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That she's unhappy.
And it's really heartbreaking how he delivers the line because he really does give all of that to us in just
that one line,
those
very
two sentences.
Short. Oh my God. Good job, Richard Kiley.
We go into the guest quarters. I guess it's like crew cabins on the Prometheus. And Sisko walks in and there's Fenna waiting for him. How'd she get on the ship? I'm very confused.
Right.
But anyway, Fenna's there. And he says, well, you vanished last time I saw you. So he calls Dax. He wants a witness here. He wants somebody else to be here. Calls Dax.
He wants the science officer too.
He wants the science. Dax pulls out the tricorder. She's scanning Fenna. No physical form. There's nothing.
Nothing corporeal about her.
Yeah,
she's
just
all
energy. All energy.
Yeah.
And so they take Fenna back out to go find Sayotik and get some answers. And Sayotik is in his quarters with Nadel, panicking because Nadel is unconscious. He can't wake her up. Sisko, Fenna, and Dax come in. Sayotik wants Dax to help. Sayotik. I mix Sayotik and Dax into one character.
I love it.
Say a Dax.
And you almost said Dask again. Just so you know.
I did. Saya Tech wants Dax to help, but she says she can't do anything, that Nadelle is dying. Saya Tech then sees Fenna, and he's very angry at Fenna. So clearly he knew Fenna. He wasn't being completely honest. He knew who Fenna was, blames Fenna for all of this. He says, I should have known. And we kind of cut to a commercial break there. We come back to that moment, and Saya Tech tells Fenna to go back, that she promised never to, you know, come back here.
But Fenna's clueless, though. Fenna has no recollection of this prior time that she was Fenna. She has no clue.
No, it's not her fault.
No, not at all. Sisko asks, what is going on, people? Explain this to me. Saya Tech says, Nadelle is a psychoprojective telepath.
And I'm so happy you said that, because I was like, I can't say that. What? A psychoprojective telepath.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that? You were saying that she was a psycho and then a projective telepath.
She's also a little psycho at times.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But Saya Tech knows that Nadelle is just projecting, because Nadelle is the psycho.
It's just projected.
Yeah. From... Fenna is just a projection.
Yeah.
And that's when Dax scans her and says, scans Nadelle and says she's going to die from all this effort, that her brain is just on fire here. And Sisko sends Dax with Fenna to leave, you know, wants them to get out, and demands that Saya Tech explain everything. And he tells the story that all these wives, the 9 wives he's had before, they all eventually grow tired of him. They leave. But Hanalan's, which is what Nadelle is, Hanalan's mate for life. So she can't leave him, even if she wanted to. She just can't do it.
Poor baby.
Mm-hmm. You know what? It's Halana. Is that what it is? It's Halana?
Halana is the planet.
It's a place. Imagine if your wife was from there, your Star Trek wife. B'Elanna from Halana is what her name would have been.
I didn't know where you were going with that, but okay.
I didn't either. That's good. I don't know B'Elanna, so there we have it. Another reason to watch Voyager.
Yes! Terry watches Voyager.
We go to another crew quarters, and Sisko comes in, explains to Fenna that she is only a projection. She's not real. She's got to return to Nadelle, or else Nadelle is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And Fenna's heartbroken because she says she loves Sisko. And this is when he says, you know, what we have is just a dream. It's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Dax calls and says, Saya Tech took the shuttle with the energy headed to the dead star and the sun. So we know that he's pulling some move here.
Epsilon 119.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Back on the bridge, Sisko runs in, tries to talk Saya Tech out of doing this. Saya Tech says, this is the only way to set Nadelle free. I've got to sacrifice myself. And he says, oh, by the way, I wrote my own obituary. I love this moment.
I know.
Oh my gosh. There's something in my vault you're going to find.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, wow, what is it? Like some exciting thing, not his own obituary.
He's prepared for everything.
That's how full of himself he is. He's writing his own obituary. It's amazing.
Amazing that he even has time to marry all these women.
Yes.
Yeah. But this is where Pearsall says his line, almost like he's doing a Stephen Wright impersonation. Professor, you'll be killed. What do you think you're doing? And I was like, no! Don't do that.
Yeah, it was painful.
Oh, it was so painful. But yeah. I do, Robbie, I do think it's nerves. I think it's nerves.
Yeah, I do too.
I do too.
Right?
Yeah. And you know what? Our sets are really intimidating. There's you're doing sci-fi.
There's a lot of people running around. I feel for the actor.
I feel for the actor, but it somebody should have voiced over his performance.
Yeah.
Saya Tech does say he wrote his own obituary, but he said, I didn't have time to update it. So please add that I sacrificed myself at the altar of science. He just wants a heroic addition.
More.
One more heroic addition.
I'm more. I'm just more.
Just the way he said that. Sacrificed myself at the altar of science.
With a smile on his face.
With a smile on his face. It's so Saitic. It's love it. Okay.
But he does crash into this, takes this shuttle with all the proto matter.
Yeah.
And I do like how the screen starts to do the
it's fritzing as he's getting.
Yes, I like that a lot. That really helped. Like, oh gosh, he really is close. It helped tell the story. I love that.
Yeah.
I like his last sentence. Cool. Let there be light. And then
wasn't that great?
Yeah. And who is that? That's basically God complex, right? creating the universe, and then God 100%. Said, let there be light. And I was like, I love it.
Wow. Yeah.
It does work, though. The sun does reignite. And then Sisko turns to look at Fena. And as it's reigniting, she's fading away with a single tear.
Okay, what is that tear? Is that tear glycerin? That she's losing? I know.
It's glycerin.
Honestly, it's so thick.
Stop it. I know I'm sorry. Glycerin. But I'm saying, but I want your opinions on, is Fena crying because she'll never see Sisko, or is there a realization from Fena that she is really Nadelle and that she's seeing her husband passing away? What did you read the tear as? I'm curious for both of
Sisko.
You.
Okay. I think it's already been established that she has no history. She has
no knowledge
awareness.
Of the professor whatsoever.
So her entire experience has been Sisko. Completely focused on Sisko. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
If the professor, the scientist, has just killed himself, how does that affect, like, this is a projection from Nadelle. So the sun being ignited has nothing to do with this projection. Why would it fade in this moment? I guess for dramatic purposes, that we know that, you know, now that he's
clearly,
dead.
It's not like it's not like Nadelle's there going, oh, free at last.
Right.
Exactly.
Free at last.
Right. She's not even in the room. She's not even on the bridge.
She's not even in the room.
She's unconscious.
She's not even conscious. She's almost dying. But
see, that's why I thought maybe part of her saw her husband die and realized maybe tears of joy.
Oh, Nadelle could see through the projection.
Yes, through the projection. That's what I was wondering, guys.
That would be a cool thing to know.
Yeah.
It wasn't told because, well then. It was
no, because
but
that
can
would
you
be
see
really...
that as a validation for what happened to the tear?
I like that idea.
Yeah,
I do too.
Garrett, I really like that idea.
Okay.
Because if we knew that then that's... we would also understand her attraction to Sisko that is maybe that it's about Nadelle being attracted to Sisko and sending the projection out because she couldn't as a married woman, but as a projection.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She could
that would have been a better story. Better way to tell that story would have helped because it was not clear to me. And the glycerin tear felt very fakey. Because her eyes were beautifully white and clear.
Yeah.
With this
and
one
with one line drawn down.
One
her...
line of
that's
glycerin
what you need the menthol.
Is what they use.
If you're gonna do glycerin, you need a little menthol too, so your eyes get red.
Redden it up.
You add menthol to it. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
But Fena is gone. We have a supplemental log. Sisko says Epsilon 119 continues to burn brightly, a fitting memorial to a brilliant man. Meanwhile, I'm happy to report Nadelle has made a complete recovery. Unfortunately, she has no memory of Fena's experiences. Mm. See, this is where the Nadelle, all sort of falls apart.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. Anyway.
Because if she did have some memory of it, then we'd be like, oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we go to the promenade back at the Fena window, I'm going to call it.
can we just call it the Fendo instead of
the Fendo. Ooh,
Fendo.
I like it.
So the window,
creative.
The Fendo.
Yes. He's gazing out. Nadelle appears, not Fena this time. Nadelle appears, wants to say goodbye. And she says she wishes she could remember Fena. And Sisko says he can.
She says, what is she like? What was she like? And Sisko goes, Fena, she was just like you. And that was it.
And then she walks away super slowly, by the way.
I know. It was like, what was that?
Super slow.
What was that?
The whole thing was so odd because he was facing away from her through most of the scene.
Yeah.
Which, of course, made you feel like this must be difficult for him. But when he said, I mean, because what would he say? She's just like you. It was, but for all of us, she was not at all like her.
Totally different.
In fact, it's too bad Nadelle wasn't a little more like Fena.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
she was less attractive, less interesting. Mm-hmm. It was like she was just devoid of personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. I wish there had been some change in the character. You know, that was another problem I had, is that Fena and Nadelle didn't seem to have any change that happened to them because of this episode. Nothing changed. You know,
it would have been nice to see in this scene with Nadelle her a little more present.
Yes.
And even if she were sad, but showing some kind of emotion because it was clear she wasn't happy in her marriage. Now he's dead. So this should be, even though it must be a mixed feeling, but for her to have no emotion at all.
I
almost wasn't like she's a Vulcan. It's like, that would be different, but still there needed to be something.
But remember, this is early in this actor's career. Maybe this scene was shot in the very beginning of that 7-day shoot. For, and maybe she was nervous as hell. And it came out kind of like a little flat, right? It was a little flat for sure. Yeah. You would want some type of resolution.
I was thinking it was a directorial or written issue.
I wasn't thinking
it was a her issue.
Yeah. But
I'm sure she, because sometimes, you know.
There were a lot of writers on this, by the way. I try not to look at credits because I don't want to see what actors are going to surprise me. But I did notice about 500 writers' names.
Story by, and
teleplay.
And there's an ampersand in there as well, and the ands, and there's a regular and with all those different
writers. There's all kinds of writers. So you would think that would make it better, but sometimes it doesn't. Having sometimes that many writers.
Too many chefs.
Too many
chefs
in the kitchen. Yes.
Because this script to me was one of the weakest so far, honestly, of your show. Script-wise, I think there were great moments.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you have a theme or a moral of this episode, Robbie, that you have come up with?
Yes. Aside from too many writers being a theme.
yeah.
Less writers would be better. Probably would have been better. But my theme is dreams can be inspiring, but it's important to distinguish between dreams and reality. That's my complex theme, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to piggyback because honestly, watching it, I was like, I felt like I didn't know where to begin because there's also Richard Kiley, with being self-involved, you just erase any chance of connection and look at how much you miss out on.
Yeah.
But I like what you're saying because that was really the red flags for me with Cisco is the concern.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is the further he got into it before he really gave pushback. It was like, this woman's giving you nothing.
So, yeah.
How can you be so interested?
Yeah, there's a lot of red flags there he ignored.
Right, there needs to be more than just physical attraction. And certainly, gratefully, he was very much aware of that.
Finally became aware of it. A little late in the episode, but yes.
Well, I think he was aware of it, but then he didn't do something about it, right?
Yeah.
I it's hard for me to come up with a theme other than be wary of a person who doesn't divulge anything to you about who they are. I guess that's probably the only thing I can say for this one. It wasn't 100%. An episode that I would sit there and go like, gosh, this episode changed my life. Like, this is the episode that really made me feel like I can get up and go do this. No, it was just like, what's happening here? I'm so confused.
Inspiring.
Yeah, like, what is happening here?
Maybe it's more about having the character development.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Showing us who he is and a little softer side instead of just that one-dimensional being, the commander, the captain.
Yeah.
I can't remember where he's at. And it, to me, he was always my captain. So even though they called him commander, which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
So weird.
Yeah. Okay, we have a Patreon poll winner for the theme or moral of the episode. And Terry, would you like to read about these themes and morals?
I would love to.
Okay, then.
Submission, it's a tie. A submission from Steph Lee. Dreams are expressions of what we want most. And a submission from Jordan Wright. The heart wants what the heart wants.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Delta Flyers. We went through Second Sight, talked about all the different things that we were confused about.
We talked about a lot of things.
Yeah, we did.
We sure did.
Especially in our intro.
I loved bonding with you guys.
It was an us bonding episode, if anything.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, so the podcast makes us show up, but us hanging out is the goal.
We even get
really
a little group therapy before we start recording.
100%.
That's always fun.
I want to thank you both for that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I needed it.
You're welcome. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into this recap and discussion of Second Sight. Join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Sanctuary. And next time for all the Patreon patrons is July 7th at 9 p.m. And for everyone else, you'll be tuning in, listening to the episode on July 8th. See you then. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.